We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, syndicating across the country on the Business Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WYBC.com, and 1490 AM WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business, along with the business of politics and sports. An innovative urban public-private initiative seeks to build consensus on economic growth and income inequality in an era of political gridlock. And then from regional transformation to transforming a nation, looking back at the leadership of the Iron Lady, British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, with her chosen biographer, all today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. And first up, Tim Welsh is a senior partner and director of McKinsey & Company, one of the leading management consulting firms in the nation. Focuses on insurance, serves as co-convener for the firm's Global Insurance CEO Roundtable. And he got his MBA at the Harvard Business School, which we're going to try not to hold against him, given Yale Radio, one of our flagship stations, and I got mine at Dartmouth. But welcome anyway, Tim.
Thanks. Very nice to be with you, Jim.
It's a real honor, and I got to say, this looks like an exciting, innovative model of public-private growth that I hadn't seen elsewhere. We're honored to have you, and particularly that this is a business group integrated with public and NGOs that's willing to look at social inequality, income inequality. It's something that I think is tearing apart the fabric of this country, a middle-class country. So I commend you for taking it on. Right off the bat, what is the Itasca Project? Where are you located? What's the mission?
Thanks, Jim. The Itasca Project is a coalition of business leaders, nonprofit leaders, some government folks, and other civic leaders in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. It's a very informal group, and we work on helping to make sure that our region continues to be economically vibrant. And a key part of that, as you alluded to, is making sure that that prosperity is shared for everybody. We all believe that we'll get better by everybody benefiting from that economic prosperity. So that's what we really do. And it's a very informal group in that we don't have any charter. There's no bylaws. There are, frankly, only two people who are really even employed to the effort. And so it allows us a lot of flexibility to pick and choose issues that are particularly important for the region.
What specifically are the goals, and how do you choose to focus your efforts?
With under the broad umbrella of economic prosperity and reducing racial and economic disparities, we tend to focus on things like transportation, job growth, education. Those would be some of the examples of things we've done. And let me be even more specific within the category of job growth. Coming out of the depth of the recession, remember back in 2008, 2009, we wanted to be a community that really was able to rebound quite quickly from the depths of that terrible financial crisis. And so the Itasca Project focused on job growth, and we really did two things. The first was we realized that our region was not well marketed. People who wanted to grow their business didn't really have a place to call that made it easy to do business in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so we created something called Greater MSP, which is now the voice of the region. And we've seen as a result of that an incremental 25,000 jobs and about $2 billion of incremental investment in the last 5 years as a result of Greater MSP. At the same time, we said one of the great assets of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area is that we have a lot of large companies, and they buy a lot of products and services from other organizations. And we created something called the Business Bridge, which is where all of those businesses work together and they focus their procurement operations on women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses, and we add a category called Minnesota-owned businesses. And so this is, of course, not charity. These businesses have to be highly competitive because they're competing on a global stage. But we made sure that our big companies got access to the smaller companies in our region. And as a result of that, there's been about $1 billion of incremental investment in Minnesota-owned companies by some of our larger companies. So those are just a few examples of how we help take the assets of the region and really make certain that we're increasing the economic vitality of the region with everybody benefiting from that.
Now, understanding how this works, you actually have CEOs that are involved on a hands-on basis in these groups, and you have politically elected folks, NGO folks. How does it come together? How do you get a consensus?
We do have a wide range of folks who are involved in this. So, yes, business leaders like CEOs, government officials are involved. And the way that it actually works is there is a core group of about 15 people or so called the Working Team, a very glamorous name. And that's a group of just genuinely interested civic leaders. Some of them have big titles, but frankly, many of them are people who are just committed to the region and have been working on this Itasca project for more than a decade now. That group helps to identify the issues that we want the broader coalition to work on. So with the example of job growth, we identified that as a key issue. What then happens is we go out to the broader coalition of Itasca leaders and say, who's passionate about this? Who could really step up? And that's where we get very often a CEO or a university president or someone like that to step up and say, I'd like to lead the charge in this area. And it's they volunteer their time. They get support from the working team. And we then bring 8 or 10 other people to form a committee around them, and that committee will work for 18 months to get something done, as I just described, on job growth. And so it is, again, this loose affiliation, but it is real senior leadership that brings their own gravitas and their organizational muscle to bear to help address some of these problems.
On the social inequality issue, haves, have-nots, how is the committee getting its arms around looking at this issue without sacrificing economic growth and with the components, racial discrimination, lowering crime, increasing educational opportunities, the things that long-term might help fix this?
Well, first of all, I want to say this is an issue that not only are we focused on, but I'm not going to pretend that we have all the answers on. These are serious issues, and they require very, very long-term solutions, and we're just trying to get it in lots of different ways. I think what is important is that we always take an employer lens to this. So we try to figure out what is the unique role that employers, because everybody who's involved in our group is an employer in some fashion, a business, a government, a nonprofit employer in some fashion. And we say, what can employers uniquely do to help address this particular issue around racial and economic disparities? So, for example, we've recently had a coalition of leaders of companies and nonprofits together simply sharing best practices about what they can do in the recruiting process and the development process in their organizations to make sure that they are attracting and retaining fabulous people of color or from different backgrounds than the majority. Right, and simply getting together, sharing best practices, and agreeing to meet on a quarterly basis to tackle these issues has resulted in very significant benefits because people have been able to learn from one another. That's an example of the kind of thing that we do. We have also worked on education, particularly around job opportunities. So what we've tried to do is say, for people coming out of high school or community college, how do we make certain that they have the skills required to be employed? And so what we did was we created a whole set of dialogues between companies and community colleges to help make sure that those community colleges were training people for the jobs that are in our region. And so that's the kind of coalition building and dialogue that we can facilitate that really keeps this inequality issue in front of us and keeps us working on it in lots of different ways to make sure that we're making some progress.
Interesting facet of some of the stuff I read is that it's a very low ego, quiet kind of group, opposite of a normal sort of political function or even a lobbying function. Is this a stated goal of yours to sort of make change and let everybody else get the credit?
That's exactly right. We are really not trying to trumpet ourselves at all. This is about helping make the community better. And if the work does that, we all feel great about it. And I think one of the things that we try very hard to do is in every initiative that we take on, education, job growth, job training, all that sort of stuff, we try to find other organizations that can be involved with us and that can ultimately run the program or whatever initiative on an ongoing basis after Itasca is involved. This is about helping others in the community succeed because Itasca has been a catalyst. This is not about trying to make sure that Itasca gets any recognition whatsoever.
Now, for those who may not get their arms around this whole thing conceptually, how are you different than, say, the economic development agencies, which are rampant in a lot of states, and Chamber of Commerce, et cetera?
This is a very good question, which we get a lot, and I think a couple of distinguishing characteristics. The first is we are an all-volunteer organization other than these two full, you know, paid people. But I think the key is we don't have really any big staff. There's no office space. There's a very poor website, which we don't even update that regularly and has some errors in it even currently. So there's very little infrastructure. So it makes it driven entirely by the passions and the enthusiasm of the volunteer participants. So if we want to take on an issue, Jim, and we can't find a CEO or an employer leader to take it on, we don't do anything about it. It is entirely volunteer, passion-led. I think a second thing that is unique about Itasca is that it tends to be very fact-based analysis. So this is not about any kind of political views at all. This is let us understand what the facts about the situation are, and let's develop options based on what we see the facts are.
That's something that I want to touch on right in the next segment as well. We'll be right back. Business Talk with Jim Campbell on the Biz Talk Radio Network, over 350 stations around the country. Next, we're going to look at some of the accomplishments, the future of the Itasca project.
Have you heard about BizTV? BizTV is the home for America's entrepreneurs, small businesses, and those who want to succeed in life. It's the only national television network committed to airing original, high-quality, educational, and inspirational programming about real business people. BizTV can provide the right kind of ideas, motivation, and education to help fuel the next generation of business owners. Visit BizTV.com and call your satellite or cable service provider to request BizTV.
This is an important message to all listeners. If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes to the IRS, the tax pros at OIC Tax want to help you. OIC Tax is dedicated to helping taxpayers just like you with their IRS problems.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS. I was working long hours and weekends just to make ends meet. To make matters worse, the IRS was about to garnish my wages, and I needed to file several years of back tax returns. Then I called the tax professionals at OIC Tax. They stopped the IRS from garnishing my wages. They even placed my account into the IRS's financial hardship program so I don't have to make any payments to the IRS. That's right, no payments to the IRS while I'm in this program.
Call OIC Tax today to see if you qualify for the IRS's financial hardship program. Call 800-790-5988. Call now and mention you heard this radio commercial and receive 10% off their already low fees. 800-790-5988. That number, 800-790-5988. Call now, 800-790-5988.
Hey, Bob, how's business? Is the new website helping?
Not good. I can't figure out how to get the website finished. How did you do it?
Easy. I called Web.com. They built my website for free. Then they promoted it on all the search engines.
Like Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Exactly. And Web.com has helped grow my business so much, I had to bring on new staff.
Call now, 1-800-535-9652. That's 1-800-535-9652.
There is no upfront charge for building the website, after which the ongoing fee applies. Rights to the website are relinquished upon cancellation unless otherwise purchased.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. With a troubled economy and government spending out of control, they've been forced to promote loose money policies, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. Birch Gold Group can help you protect your savings by rolling over all or a portion of your IRA or 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the best gold prices in years and enjoy the long-term hedge against inflation that gold provides by moving into a gold IRA from Birch Gold Group, the precious metal IRA specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today for a free consultation on how a tax-free rollover to a gold IRA can offer stability, protection, and the peace of mind that your life savings, which you've worked so hard to build, is safe. Call 888-999-1351 and receive Birch Gold's free information kit, which offers the best-kept secrets for safeguarding your savings with gold. Call 888-999-1351. That's 888-999-1351.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back talking with McKinsey senior partner Tim Welsh from the Itasca Project. And I want to start off where you left off. One of the differentiators of this is that you guys tightly, are linked to what I'd call McKinsey methodology, which is very data-driven, an objective approach. Talk about how you interject that, how you keep it longer term, and is there some kind of ROI metric that you use to see if you guys are being effective or not?
We do have a pretty rigorous methodology that is, I think, broadly defined as, you know, just good analytics. Many businesses use similar kinds of approaches. But for every issue that we address, we really do get grounded in the facts. And that, by being very realistic based on the facts, it helps us to generate options for how to solve the problem that are, you know, nonpartisan, that are simply just what seems to be the right thing to do. And then a very important part of what we're trying to measure is less about ROI, but more about what we think of as impact or making a difference. It's called the Itasca Project because we only exist so long as we are doing work that the community values and we're making a tangible difference that people see. And if we're not doing that, we can just stop. And it was initially set up as a project for precisely that reason. We didn't know how long we would have to go on or how long we would be able to be useful. And so we literally, unless we're making a difference, we could literally just, you know, stop meeting on Friday mornings, and it would be that simple. So that's our metric, is have we made a discernible difference that matters to the community that nobody else could do in quite that same way.
What would you guys claim are some of your top achievements? I'll ask you about a couple, but let me ask, you know, let you pick what you think is the top tangible achievements.
I think we've talked about the job growth initiatives, which I think we feel very proud of. I think we feel similarly proud of work we've done in higher education. I touched a little bit previously on the connection between the community colleges and the businesses. The workforce has been extremely powerful. We've also been very proud of the fact that we got alignment between the business community and higher education around priorities and got some additional funding for higher education in our state, which is so valuable in a knowledge-driven economy like we are. I think we feel very good about the fact that we have put the issue of disparities out there. We were the first in 2005 to really identify this issue in a significant way that got people talking about it, and I think since then we've touched on it in lots of different ways that I've talked about previously. I want to be clear on that one, that we have miles to go. There's, you know, we will not be satisfied until there's a lot more progress, but I feel good about that. And then finally would be transportation, where we have kept this issue front and center for our region. And in 2008, we're involved in helping pass a major transportation bill. We've kept the issue front and center, have done some fabulous transit ROI analysis. It's really shaped the debate about transportation in our region. So those would be some of the ones that I would really highlight.
In fact, two of those things I want to highlight again is I'm very impressed on the consensus on increasing funding to college and university systems, because most states are doing the exact opposite right now because of budget problems. The other thing is that a little bit underneath this story on the if this is the $7 billion gas tax for infrastructure improvement, actually required the governor, who was a Republican, who's also a presidential candidate, Tim Pawlenty, to be overridden. Which, no new taxes is the easy thing that all politicians and et cetera, love. So it's very impressive that you must have marshaled the sort of the data analytics behind that to beat the politics.
Well, I think a couple things about transportation. First of all, we did do a lot of analysis that really helped shape the debate. But it was also, and I would really highlight this, the coalition that was built. It was not Itasca by any means. We were part of a group that included the chamber, the state chamber, the Minnesota Business Partnership, and other groups that were really quite pivotal in that. I think that's one of the beauties of this is you can get lots. Itasca is a place that can bring lots of different people together to get them get focus on the right issue, and that makes a huge difference.
Let me ask you on this regional trying to lure businesses, et cetera. Have you looked at that so that it's more than a zero-sum game? You may have heard we've just had a big issue. GE's moving out of Connecticut. You know, sometimes these things are just states bidding against each other with goodies. Do you have a way of doing this so it's a little bit beyond that?
Well, I think that one of the misconceptions that people have about job growth from companies is it's very easy to look at the headlines and say the job growth comes when GE moves from Connecticut to Boston. Mm-hmm. But in fact, what the facts demonstrate is that the vast majority, something like 80% of job growth, comes from companies that are already in a region. And it's helping them understand that if they're going to grow, they should grow in the region versus in other places. And part of that is just maintaining an ongoing dialogue with those institutions to understand what their growth plans are, being coordinated so you know what land is available, you know what skills need to be developed, et cetera. And so a lot of what we've seen is actually just very good facilitation and dialogue among the companies that are already there. So it's less about stealing people from other places and more about building what we've already got that's so strong.
Now, I noticed that the regional unemployment there is 2.9%, just under 3%. National, it's just 5 or over, depending. That's about 40% lower than the national rate. Do you think that some of the stuff that you put in motion is part of that reason that you're significantly below the national levels?
The initiatives that we put in place around job growth have made a material difference. Part of the reason we focused on job growth was that from in the early 2000s, we were not growing jobs in Minneapolis-St. Paul at the same rate that the national average was, the nation was growing jobs, and we've now reversed that. So we are growing jobs faster than the national average, and that's really fantastic, and I do believe that is at least in part because of some of the initiatives that we've put in place.
Okay, so I don't know if Minnesota is unique, if better able, you know, Midwestern culture or less diversity. Is this kind of an idea that can be successful? Could it be taken and exported to other regions in the country?
We absolutely believe it's exportable, and quite frankly, we've been the Itasca project was inspired by examples from other cities as well, so it's not like we just came up with this idea ourselves, but absolutely, particularly cities that have the kind of scale that we are, where many people can come together and know each other in a very, you know, tangible and easy way. I think there are lots of places in the country that would benefit from this kind of cross-sector collaboration with a long-term view and a fact-based approach to things.
What about raising it to the state level? Here, I just did an interview a local Greenwich with a PwC, Pricewaterhouse consultant. They have a new study out on ranking state competitiveness and net migration patterns. And we finished 47th here in Connecticut. We have a huge unfunded pension liability, healthcare. A lot of states do. Do you see this as something that could work at a state level well, and does the size of the state or the size of the region matter?
I think the we've not been asked about it at the state level, but I think the methodologies would certainly apply, the fact-based, the focus on the long-term issue. I think one of the questions you'd have to think through in applying it at a state is, there's a real value in the trust that is built up among people who live in the same area and see each other very regularly. And I just don't know if that trust can be built up at the state level, partly because of just geographic distance. But I will tell you there is just something magical about the fact that a whole group of people come to know each other reasonably well and, very importantly, trust that each of the people involved have the best intentions. We're all trying to do something that is good for the region. That just makes things go much more smoothly.
Very impressive. How, if people are interested, how can they learn more about the Itasca project?
I think the simplest way is probably to go on our website, which, in spite of needing to be updated, has many of our reports and things like that. And from the website, you can also get in touch with the two project coordinators of this who are housed in part of the McKinsey office there.
Great thanks to McKinsey Senior Partner and Director Tim Welsh, describing for us really what is a state-of-the-art public-private partnership in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities area known as the Itasca Project. Coming next, Margaret Thatcher at her zenith.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
If you're diabetic, this message could change your life. Is your blood sugar out of control even when you do all the right stuff? Are you afraid of diabetic blindness and the risk of amputation, as well as all those other side effects? Well, you should be. Is there anything that could help manage your blood sugar? Nobetes is a natural supplement that may quickly and dramatically lower your blood sugar.
My name is Bob Corder. I've been using Nobetes for about 3.5 to 4 months now. And in the first 3 months, I've actually lowered my blood sugars from 500s down to 139, and then it dropped to 88 to 93.
My name is Kirsten. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and while taking Nobetes, my blood sugar levels dropped from 295 to 115 in just one day.
The FDA hasn't evaluated these statements, and Nobetes isn't intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But for many, it's helped drop their blood sugar. So if you've been evaluated with high blood sugar, don't delay. Evaluate Nobetes now. Call 800-554-4128 and get your free bottle. Just cover shipping and handling. Call 800-554-4128. That's 800-554-4128.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
Biz Talk Radio.
Next up, the transformation of a nation, the Iron Lady, former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, turning around a nation in decline. Our guest, Charles Moore, biographer, historian, columnist with the Daily Telegraph in England. He covered Lady Thatcher's first and second governments. He is her personally chosen biographer. This is the second volume of what will be a three-volume set. Margaret Thatcher at her zenith in London, Washington, and Moscow. Welcome, Charles. This is an amazingly ambitious book about an amazingly ambitious woman.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. You're right. That's why it's three volumes, because she asked me to do it, she gave me access to all the things that nobody knew about before, all her personal papers, interviews with her and her family and her close associates. And through her influence, I was allowed to see the British government paper and indeed a lot of Reagan papers, which have not been seen. So this is why it needs to be this length, because you really need to tell this story with the evidence.
And I'll say there's just a ton of inside information here. But for our American audience and maybe younger audience, put in perspective briefly how bad a shape the UK was in when she took it over. And is it her will that did transform a nation?
It was in bad shape, late 1970s. Quite a bad time for most Western countries, including the United States, but particularly bad for Britain because huge inflation, huge bad public finances, and a terrible labor unions situation where the unions were endlessly striking and also were increasingly politicized. And so Mrs. Thatcher really had to make a lot of changes, and she won in 1979 because she was promising change and because things seemed so bad, because in normal times, her party, the Conservative Party, would never have chosen such a radical leader, and they wouldn't have chosen a woman either at that time.
Interesting.
But they were really looking, you know, they were desperate. She sort of, as they say, kitchen sinked the problem and said, things have really got to be different, and here's how. And it wasn't totally unlike what Ronald Reagan was doing in the United States at the same time.
Do you think that she broke the back of socialism? And what made her tick? Was she a strange person?
To answer the second half of that question first, she was a strange person in a way because she was so single-minded, so unusual, and she really had to do everything sort of alone except for the great support of her husband, Dennis, because it was such a man's world. And also because she was ploughing a lonely furrow to start with in what she tried to do. But the other curious characteristic, which you would think might not go with that, is that she had a very good rapport with ordinary British people. She had a sense of, I think it was President Nixon that coined the phrase the silent majority. And she had a sense of the ambitions of people like that and that they were fundamentally conservatives. And she had a sort of radical conservatism that appealed to them. So she was very good at preaching the message, but she was also very good at acting on the message because she wasn't only concerned with gestures, which a lot of politicians are. She actually wanted to see what happened in a piece of legislation, and she would return to it later to see if it had worked, which, you know, doesn't interest most politicians. and so she'd keep it up to the mark all the time. And so gradually, I mean, it was terrifically unpopular and seemingly unsuccessful in the first years, and it began to pull through, particularly with victory in the Falklands War, in recovering the Falkland Islands from Argentina in 1982. And in the period I'm writing about in this volume, 1983 to 1987, she had become completely on top of British politics. And though she was unpopular with a good many people, she won those two elections, 83 and 87, with overwhelming majorities.
Do you think she was misunderstood fundamentally in any way? I mean, she had an image of being ruthless, rather rigid, uncaring. Reagan had the uncaring aspect, too, although he didn't like personal conflict like you describe her. Do you think, what was the biggest revelation or surprise to you getting so deep into this, and do you think she was misunderstood in any way?
She was misunderstood. She certainly was ruthless. She wasn't at all unscrupulous. You know, she was a moral person, but she was ruthless. She was very, very tough. But she wasn't uncaring because she felt very, very passionately about what she was trying to do, and she considered it to be what was best for her country, and she was very deeply concerned about her country. And she also was very concerned about certain forms of hardship. I mean, she, in the great miners' strike, the Titanic miners' strike that took place in the period I'm writing about in this volume, the miners who were striking were made to strike without a ballot by their leader. And that meant that about a third of them refused to strike at all. And Mrs. Thatcher was extremely concerned for them, the so-called working miners, because they were being picketed and often assaulted and intimidated. And it was very important for her victory, and also she believed for them, that they should be able to get to work and work with impunity. And she took a strong personal interest in that, which was, I think, could be said to be a caring. The discovery, I had two big discoveries that I didn't quite understand before I started on this book about her. The first was that though she certainly was a conviction politician, as you said, she was also very cunning. She was very good at knowing when to do things at the right moment, you know, picking your time, sometimes waiting before you did something drastic until you were strong enough. She did that with the miners, actually. And she, of course, wouldn't admit ever to being cunning, which in itself is quite a cunning thing to do, I think. and the other thing was that it came home to be much, much more strongly than before how incredibly difficult it was to do what she did, because not only was the country in such poor shape, but she, being the one and only woman in such a male environment, was an extraordinary lonely task. And I try to recapture that because I think it's quite hard to understand nowadays just how tough that was.
You do capture it well, and you even get the sense that she has no fear standing completely against the entire cabinet if it's an issue she feels strongly about.
That's right, and I think the thing is that this is partly to do with her. It's to do with her beliefs, but it's also to do with her sex, her being the only one, because she strongly felt that it was a binary choice for her, a binary result, either victory or defeat. She sensed that the sort of what you might call the male club that usually ran Britain, you know, it would look after its own members. So if they made a mess of things, they wouldn't all go tumbling out of office. They would just be given a slightly less good job or whatever. And she knew or believed, and I think she was probably right, that if she didn't keep winning, she would be out. There would be no second. She sometimes said this privately, there's no second chance for a woman. And that's why she was such a perfectionist and why some people thought she was rigid, because she thought it was essential to fight all the way.
Just fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about her relationship with Reagan. They were kind of soulmates, and they jointly brought about the end of the Cold War, in fact. Talk a little bit about their relationship.
Well, the soulmate bit's important because it's explained partly by the fact that they became friends in adversity when both of them were out of power before they had won power. And that's always a stronger basis for friendship than when you're already successful. And they were friends, partly, I think, a sort of personal rapport, but also shared beliefs about economic freedom and about Western freedom against the Soviet threat, which was, of course, the dominant feature of that period. And indeed, those economic things went together a bit with the communist threat. And so when she and Reagan came into office, she a bit before Reagan, but when they came in, they got together, they strengthened intermediate nuclear range missiles in Europe against the Soviets in order to bargain from strength. And in the period that I'm talking about, 84, 85, Margaret Thatcher blazed the trail for a change of that, because now it was time to bargain from strength in her view. And she was really the first person to persuade President Reagan, because she had met Mikhail Gorbachev, who, when she met him, was not yet the Soviet leader, but she'd invited him over because she thought he probably would be the Soviet leader. And she'd been pretty impressed, and she thought things were going to change or could change. And so as soon as she had met him at her country house, Chequers, which, you know, is like Camp David over here, she flew to the United States and wanted to see and talk to President Reagan about Gorbachev and also about his famous SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, and what all that would mean. And she, I think, had a lot of influence on him about that. And he didn't always agree with her. They had a very fundamental difference about nuclear weapons, because he was truly against nuclear weapons, and she believed in the deterrent theory. But the thing was, there was a great basis of trust. And she was able, I think, to move him along. I think I show that in the book, to approach the whole Gorbachev question. And that was the key thing that got that started to move towards the end of the Cold War.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship radio stations, Yale Radio and WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut, along with 350 stations around the country. We're going to have more on the leadership story of Margaret Thatcher coming next.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
How deep in debt are you? $10,000? $15,000? Maybe even more? And every day that goes by, you know what happens. Your debt gets larger and larger and larger. Well, if you've had it with your mushrooming debt problem and the stress it is causing you, make this free call today to the Debt Solutions Network. One quick, no-obligation call is all it takes for one of our partner companies to show you how they can help you get out of debt. So if you have $10,000 or more in combined debt and you want to learn how you can solve it, make this free, no-obligation call now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035.
If you are in serious debt, you have to get out of it and fast. Call my friends at the Debt Solutions Network now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035. Call us 24/7. 800-814-5035.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now. 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
If you're like me, and you probably are, you probably have some toys, like a desktop computer, a laptop, maybe a tablet, one or two smartphones, a printer, maybe even a high-speed modem and wireless router. That's a lot of technology. Who do you call when something breaks? If you had Tech Butler, one call can fix them all. And for a lot less than every other tech support service. Really, Tech Butler will cover every device you own for as little as $99 a year. And when you buy 2 years of protection, they'll give you a third year free, so you'll save even more. Plus, you get the peace of mind knowing that every device you own today or in the future is covered. Tech Butler. One call literally covers all your devices for less than everyone else. Get 1 year free when you buy two. Save money. Call right now. 1-800-434-0522. That's 1-800-434-0522. Again, 1-800-434-0522. 1-800-434-0522.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest, Thatcher biographer Charles Moore. Back to Reagan. Interestingly, SDI Star Wars initiative was really kind of nuts, right? I mean, and
yes and no. She thought that. She thought that it was unlikely to work fully, but she very strongly supported his research on it because she thought that, first of all, she could see he was set on it, and secondly, she believed that it would intimidate the Soviets into yeah. believing they'd got to change, and it did, in fact, have that effect.
Let me ask you this, though. The other side of the equation was huge fallout over Grenada.
Yes, that was a serious thing because the United States decided to invade the Caribbean island of Grenada because... it had been taken over by a Marxist coup. Problem was that our queen, Queen Elizabeth, was also queen of Grenada because it was a former colony. And this was a sort of, the invasion was therefore considered by Mrs. Thatcher to be an insult to Britain. And that also she was very angry that she hadn't been informed. And she actually, it's fascinating because she really felt like a sort of betrayed girlfriend President Reagan. It was that type of relationship, and there's a wonderful phone call between them. It's just like a film from the 1940s, where he's apologising and she's very cold, and it was really quite difficult. But in the end, she accepted that, the coup had had a good result.
You know what I've always been impressed with too is you'll recall when they're putting the missiles, the INF missiles, into Europe. All the peace folks, the peaceniks, if you will, you know, thought that Reagan and Thatcher were evil. And they actually got the zero option done more than any peaceful, sort of rally could have ever accomplished, right? And Reagan had this nuclear-free world vision, which was vision and dreaming, and Thatcher was more pragmatic.
That's right, and it was actually, in a strange way, a good combination because he could push the big idea of bringing about this dramatic change, and she could make it bed in with reality and with the Allies because... The Allies were very frightened of SDI, and she was the bridge between Reagan and the other European allies.
Let's talk about some of her big achievements, because really radical changes inside Britain. This enemy within, this miners' strike. Reagan had a similar thing, which you may know, the air traffic controllers.
Yeah,
that was like a three-day strike. This was a one-year face-down.
Incredible, yes. And... there'd been a dummy run for it in 1981 where she'd given in because she wasn't ready. And so in the intervening years, she got ready. And getting ready meant changing the law about trade union practices, and above all, it meant stocking up the coal at power stations and pit heads. And so when it happened in 1984, she was ready. But it was very bitter, sometimes very violent, very divisive. And it wasn't at all clear until about the autumn, it started in March, until about perhaps November, that she was going to win. And she didn't finally win until March the following year. And she didn't give in at all. So the miners went back to work without having gained anything from their strike. And it was the key moment, because it was the miners that had brought down the Conservative government in the 70s, and you just had to win this one in order to change industrial relations.
You probably can't find a leader in the world that would have the political will to do this for a solid year.
It was a very amazing, it really was like a war. And, Jim, just to illustrate how everything did change, and in this way you could say Mrs. Thatcher ultimately wasn't divisive. In 1979, when she came into office, Britain lost 29.5 million working days to strikes. And in the year she left office, 1990, Britain lost 1.3 million working days to strikes.
Now, let me ask you about this. We were talking about a socialist nation, essentially, and all the major big industries, from British telephone, oil and gas, all nationalized. How big was the privatizing initiative, and how did she get that done?
It was huge, and she got it done gradually. She was nervous about it, and not least for a funny reason, which we forget now, which is that she thought nobody would want to buy these industries because they were so badly run. So first of all, you had to get them in shape, and then you had to see who would want them, and you also had to deal with trade unions and a lot of opposition. But it had a sort of gathered momentum, and the big one was British Telecom 1984, which was the biggest single launch of any stock ever in history of the world, I think, and British Gas two or three years later. But about 40, 50, 60 industries went this way eventually. And actually it became, you could say it was Britain's greatest global policy export ever, really, because the strange thing was that nobody had really thought of it before. You know, ever since the industries had been nationalized, which they had a great deal in many parts of the world since the Second World War, just hadn't really thought of it. And once you could work out how to do it, you could sell it. And the world bought it, literally, you know, 100 countries. And the other interesting thing about it is no country's really gone back on it. Once you do it, you do it.
Very impressive. Before we get to her legacy, when we end the national version, briefly, biggest failure, poll tax?
Poll tax, which is a new tax on each householder. She brought it in because the previous tax had been extremely unpopular, but she, for once, was too unaware of how people would react. Because what it meant was there were an awful lot, about 7 million new taxpayers. And there's a simple basic fact about human life, is that even if the tax is fair, if you haven't been paid, if you haven't been paying it before, and now you are, you don't like it very much.
I thought it was very interesting because Bill Clinton became he was the youngest governor of Arkansas and then the youngest ex-governor because he put in a tax similar to this.
You can't have too much logic in the way you do taxes, and Mrs. Thatcher was perhaps losing touch. This is quite late in her prime ministership, and I think she may have been losing a bit of touch with popular feeling.
Okay, let's get to her legacy now. You know, Britain seems to sometimes decide to throw out its great leaders. Churchill was thrown out after World War II, and you'll get to it in your next book, but Thatcher is ousted. Is she the best prime minister since Churchill? Where does she rank among British and world leaders?
She certainly would be the most important prime minister, and I think one could say the best since Churchill. And actually, more important than Churchill as a peacetime prime minister. And by the way, you said, Jim, that Churchill was thrown out, and that's true. Mrs. Thatcher wasn't thrown out by the people, which Churchill was.
Good point, yeah.
And she won all her general elections. I met her after she left office, and she said she's writing her memoirs. I said, what are you going to call them? And she said, Undefeated, which would have been a good title. I don't know why she didn't use it. And the reason for that was that she was undefeated. And even when she was kicked out by her own party, she got more votes than her opponent. But she just didn't get enough to solve the problem, so she felt it was better to go.
Thanks to Charles Moore. The book is Margaret Thatcher at Her Zenith in London, Washington, and Moscow, published by Alfred A. Knopf. You can go to margaretthatcher.org, which he mentions in the book, for a lot of the materials on her. Our next show, Fox News chief correspondent James Roden tells us about his one-on-one interview and interrogation even of former Vice President Cheney. Now stay with us as we go into overtime. More on leadership of Margaret Thatcher. Thanks to Tim Welsh on the Itasca Project, Charles Moore on Thatcher. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Gamble.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalk Radio.